I, like some of you, was born in the time when children were routinely vaccinated against smallpox. For reasons that I admit I do not entirely understand, I was not vaccinated as an infant, or if I was, it didn't work. Whatever happened, it was agreed that I would be vaccinated just before I entered public school, first grade. But this did not happen. The reason I know this is because I remember clearly the school nurse walking up and down the aisles as children rolled up their sleeves to show the scar that indicated that they had been vaccinated. And I had no scar to display. Years later, as a freshman in college, I remember sitting around a dorm room comparing smallpox vaccination scars. Now, this might strike you as an odd pastime, but we were meeting people from different parts of the country for the first time, and some of them were vaccinated on their thighs. So this was a matter of great interest to us all, but now I had a scar to display on my shoulder, but because I had been vaccinated later, sometime during first grade, mine was more prominent, and people wanted to know why. And so I said the part about how it didn't work as an infant, and then I explained that I couldn't have it the summer before first grade because I had cut my foot very badly that summer, and that I couldn't be vaccinated because... And at that point, I paused for a moment, perplexed by the strange words that were about to come out of my mouth. I couldn't be vaccinated because the cut in my foot meant that the vaccine would have fallen out the hole. Now, as I said these words, I knew that they did not make any sense. But an explanation given to a five-year-old had stored itself in my brain. And I had never had a reason to revisit it in all of those years. And so there it sat, unchallenged. Now, I later went on to learn that you can't be vaccinated for smallpox with any open wound, and it's got nothing to do with gravity. But in this incident, I realized that for 12 years, for a dozen years, I had harbored a belief and understanding that made no sense. Now, this particular strange truth did no harm that I'm aware of. But it got me thinking about what other things I thought I knew that might be equally discombobulated. I heard of a story like that last night. I had the privilege of attending a dinner for the Interfaith Council of Central Florida. I've been attending their executive committee meetings, and this group that has been formed out of the remnants of an earlier group is entering a new stage. They are hiring an executive director to really help us with interfaith work and dialogue in Central Florida, which I am very excited about. The new executive director spoke to us, and he told us about his beginnings as a Missouri farm boy. And in his Republican Protestant home, he was taught to mistrust even the Catholic Democrats down the street who were his closest neighbor. He knew nothing about the world beyond Christianity. And he told us the story of his evolution as he got to know different people. And there he stood last night, becoming the executive director of an organization that had Protestants and those Catholics, and also representatives from the Jewish community, Muslim, Hindu, Buddhist, and Sikh, and Unitarian Universalist. And he was clearly grateful for the change in belief that had happened in his life. Sometimes we hold on to beliefs that are not helpful to us or to those around us. What a blessing! What a blessing that we have the capacity to change our minds, our beliefs, our perspectives. Sometimes we don't really know what we believe until we say it out loud. Other times we don't really know what we believe until our beliefs are really tested. We all have values that we hold up, beliefs we claim, perspectives we espouse. And sometimes we do it consciously. But sometimes things are embedded so deeply inside us, we don't even know they're there. We don't realize that not everybody else sees the world the same way that we do. We don't recognize that at some point We have made choices in our values, beliefs, and perspectives, and they affect how we act in the world. It is when we are tested, when the rubber meets the road, in our moment of truth, that we find out what is most alive for us in our hearts and in our minds. Perhaps you have had such a moment of awakening, awareness, when suddenly you realize that you don't believe the words that you're saying or can't take the action that is expected of you. Some of us have, some of us hadn't. For some of us, it was a small moment. For others, it was a big, life-changing moment. My invitation to you this morning is to reflect on how well your current beliefs stand up and how well they support you. Because, frankly, it would be easier to find out here in the sanctuary or in conversation amongst us that you have a little rub in your belief system before a life crisis points out the disconnect. Issues of loss, illness, death often bring us face to face with the disconnects in our lives. Some years ago, I knew a woman who had lost her husband to cancer. He had been sick for quite a long time. The widow had a very difficult time after his death. Now, grief is a normal, natural, healthy response to death. Unfortunately, occasionally, people's deep underlying assumptions get in the way of their movement through the grief process. In this woman's case, one belief she articulated to me, even 5 years after her husband's death, was, "I know people die. I just didn't think we would." And I've come to realize since then that a surprising number of us hold some version of that belief. But most people, when inevitably faced with the reality with regard to death, find some way to incorporate it into their belief system. This woman, in the time that I knew her, could not. She also held another belief that I did not think served her well. She never articulated it clearly, but I would say it this way. To be happy again after her husband's death would be disloyal. This belief made it very difficult for her to move through the grieving process. And sadly, I was not skilled enough to help her. I have, however, informed my own husband that if I die before him, not only may he be happy again, but I want him to be happy again. I expect him to be happy again. I've even gone so far to say that if he is not happy again, I will come back and haunt him. As Unitarian Universalists, we don't all have the same ideas about death, but I do hope that each of us has beliefs that will support us when we face issues of death, either our own or that of those we love. Issues of life and death often challenge our beliefs. The events of September 11th, 2001, challenged a collective American belief that we are invincible. It called into question our place in the world. Events since then have called into question the kind of world we want to live in. And I believe that much of the rancor in public debate these days is our collective struggle to reconcile earlier beliefs with realities that cannot be ignored. We need to be part of the conversation about the world we want to live in. But there is much short of life and death that brings up challenges to our beliefs as well. One of those areas, and there's a long list of areas. When I started, I realized we had a long list we could cover, so we're just doing a few today. One issue has to do with agency or our sense of control over our lives. I'd like you to imagine a spectrum. On one end is the belief that I have no control of my life. Things happen to me, usually bad things. I can't do anything about them. I have no agency. I am a victim. On the other end of the spectrum is a belief that I have complete control of my life. It's up to me to make things happen in my life. Perhaps it's up to me to make things happen in the lives of people around me as well. I am over-responsible. Some people call me a control freak. Now, most people fall somewhere in the middle of that spectrum. But I'm betting a lot of you, as I described those two ends, have people you think fall a little too far to one end or the other. An interesting question comes up for a clergy when we speak on topics like this, because in any group of people, there are people who might do well to take a little more responsibility. These are people who often resonate with the prosperity gospel that has been so popular in recent years. Do the right thing, think the right thought, and health, wealth, and prosperity will be yours. Some people, low on this end of the on the low responsibility end of the spectrum, might benefit from this. It would be helpful to give up the I'm a victim belief and replace it with I can take some control over my life belief. It would be helpful. But my concern is that sometimes that happens, it ricochets all the way over to the other end of the spectrum, to an equally unhelpful place where it joins other people. And here's those people who take too much responsibility. They make themselves sick believing that they can and should be in complete control. If anything goes wrong, it is their fault. If they get sick, they did something wrong. If the relationship is troubled, it's because they didn't try hard enough or they weren't loving enough. These people can exhaust themselves and the people around them in their quest for perfection and in their expectation of control. These are the people for whom a little letting go would go a long way. As the popular prayer puts it, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Today in this room, there are people who would do well to let go a bit. Notice that I'm looking down, not at any of you. To seek serenity. It would be good for them, and I suspect you know who you are, to reflect on what underlying and unchallenged beliefs encourage you to overfunction. Today in this room, there are people who would do well to be a little more proactive in creating the life of which they dream. It would be good for them, and I suppose, again, that you know who you are, to reflect a little on what underlying and unchallenged beliefs encourage you to hold back. Some of you, like me, will recognize yourself as being in both groups. I know there are areas where I could be more accepting, more serene, and yet there are other areas in which I could step up, be more bold, more courageous. So my question, my invitation, is reflection on what beliefs keep you from living the life that is possible. You may not know, but I encourage you to find out. Here's my suggestion. Think of it as homework if you want. Watch yourself over the next week. When you find yourself unduly aggravated, try to name the belief that stands between you and serenity. Perhaps you believe that, for example, salespeople should never be rude or incompetent. What a lovely thought! But not very helpful unless you want to be regularly disappointed. Watch yourself over the next week. What if you let go of that belief? And when you are holding back, try to name the beliefs between you and action. Perhaps you believe, for example, nice people don't trouble other people with their needs. Well, the rest of us appreciate your thoughtfulness, but how do you know we would be troubled? Perhaps it would make us feel good to meet your needs. How do you know that we wouldn't love to meet your needs? How will you know unless you ask? So watch yourself. Check your assumptions. Your deeply held beliefs, are they helping you? Or might they benefit from a little tune-up? One last set of assumptions I would like to hold up that are related to each other. One is the assumption, I'm not okay, I'm not lovable. And the other is the assumption, what we do does not matter. First, I want to tell you about I met last night when she sent me an email. Is a young, closeted lesbian living in a small town 1,000 miles away from Orlando. She recently discovered 1U through our podcasts. She wrote a lovely note about the impact this discovery has had on her. I want to share a little bit of it with you. She wrote, "I have a longing to feel what it feels like to be in a community that strives to accept and love everyone as they are with no exceptions. I am amazed that in your church, people can simply be themselves and at the same time be accepted and allowed to change and grow and question." Later, at the end of her letter, she writes, "I will continue to listen to your audio sermons each week online and hope that you and your church know that you are touching people far beyond Orlando. Although I cannot physically attend the services, I would if I could, I want you and your congregation to know that there is a young lady in a small town far away who is touched every week as she listens to your sermons. She is touched because she knows that if she was there, she would be welcomed and accepted just the way she is. I'm not sure if this is possible, but would it be okay with you if I consider one you my church home for now? I know I don't live in Orlando, but I wonder, would that be okay? I will, of course, write back to and I will help her to find a congregation closer to her home. But in the meantime, I thought it would be okay for to consider one you her church home. And I can write back and tell her that, but I thought since she's likely to be listening to this, that maybe you would like to tell her yourself. So what do you think? Would it be okay for to consider one you her church home for now? I thought so. I want his belief to be, I'm okay, and I am so lovable. And so now I invite you to reflection on that one last assumption, that belief that what we do doesn't make a difference. I invite you to consider the possibility that what we do matters, that what we do matters deeply. If your beliefs are working for you, if they support you in your life, in the regular times, in the good times, and in the bad times too, fabulous. If they do not, remember that you are allowed to change and grow and question. Remember too that you have companions on the journey. And remember that we love you as the person you are today and as the person you are still becoming. Please join me in a moment of reflection.